This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 23rd of June, 2023. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 23rd of June. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
And David Baldwin.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. The main headlines this week are: Station Move sees taxi row kick off, Call for 20 mile per hour citywide limit, and Brilliant Repair Cafe gets off to a flying start. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which was Station Move sees taxi row kickoff. Winchester's largest taxi company has taken over the top spots by the train station, sparking anger with hackney carriages being forced to wait on the other side of the road. Tensions are rising between Wintax and the hackney carriages, with Wintax purchasing a four-year tender from Southwestern Railways, SWR, to use the bays directly outside the station as a waiting area for its pre-booking-only vehicles. One customer has spoken of argy-bargy between two sets of drivers. Winchester City Council has introduced a trial shorter taxi rank for hackney drivers on the opposite side of the road, but the independent drivers have been left frustrated by the lack of communication and decline in business. Wintax said SWR gave them the opportunity to pay for the prime position tender after years of hackney drivers refusing to pay their permits. A Wintax spokesperson said, "The tender for the train station was offered to other taxi companies who could have paid, but we had to do it as a strategic business move to stop a whole other company coming in. The hackney drivers shot themselves in the foot by not paying, and now they're trying to push the agenda that we're taking their spot. I understand why they're aggrieved, but the council made it clear to them that they needed to pay to keep the rank." A group of hackney drivers said they didn't pay in 2021 due to COVID, but weren't subsequently given the chance to pay for their usual permit following the pandemic. A hackney driver who asked to remain anonymous said, "The taxi rank has been in front of the station for more than 30 years and we've been paying SWR all of that time." Commuters have also been left confused. Carol McGill of Coulson Road, Winnell, has been getting taxis from the station for years, but said the new system was absolute chaos after trying to get a taxi with her friend and her dog. Carol, 65, said, "It was a nightmare. All these people were stood around puzzled after being told the taxis are pre-booking only. It makes it much worse. There were two elderly ladies with heavy luggage, confused to how to get a taxi, and a hackney driver had to come over and get them so they didn't have to cross. It's no good for elderly people who don't use a phone much. I had no idea about the changes, and I know Winchester. It's not a very good advert for the city. It's been absolute chaos. Police had to be there at one point. The Samaji Baji going on between the pre-booked and the hackney drivers. New signs, QR codes, tablets and payphones have been installed to help people pre-book since Wintax's contract started at the beginning of the month. A member of Wintax staff is also on hand to help people book a taxi, but is not legally allowed to approach people. SWR was contacted for more information on why the area was put up for tender. In response, a spokesperson for SWR said, "Wintax has exclusive access to taxi spaces at Winchester Station, and they are responsible for managing the individual taxis. They are required to provide sufficient vehicles to meet demand at the station and comply with local licensing laws."
Call for 20 mile per hour citywide limit. Drivers are routinely flouting the 20 mile per hour limit in one of Winchester's most historic streets. It sparked City Council leader Martin Todd to say he wanted to see 20 mile an hour zones across the whole city. The 20 mile an hour limit was introduced around 10 years ago in Hyde Street and much of the city centre, but many motorists are ignoring the limit. A meeting heard last night. Deirdre Wood of Hyde Street told the Town Forum, "There is a growing unhappiness in Hyde Street regarding speeding. I have lived in Hyde Street for 39 years. It is a narrow residential road, and in some places there's only a few feet separating homes from the traffic. There are 34 listed buildings, but over the years the road has been allowed to become a rat run. Cyclists are discouraged because the speeding cars. Hyde Street has been measured by Imperial College London as one of the most polluted in Winchester. Cars doing 30 miles produce twice as much as nitrogen dioxide as those at 20. Mrs. Wood said 20 mile per hour signs had been taken away and the white 20 painted markings on the road were fading. She said 5,000 vehicles use the road, with the numbers boosting by the use of sat-nav. Mrs. Woods called for the lights that measure speed and change colour or flash a message, as used elsewhere successfully. City Councillor Martin Todd said that with Conservative Councillor Fiona Mather, he had lobbied for High Street to be included in the city centre's 20 mile per hour zone for some 10 years ago. He said he would press for the 20 markings to be refreshed and said he wanted the 20-minute limit to go wider than the roads in the city centre. Councillor Todd said, "We should be creating an area-wide zone of 20 miles per hour. One reason Hyde Street doesn't work is that across Winchester, sometimes it's 20 and sometimes it's not 20. If we said we wanted the norm for residential streets everywhere to be 20, that would help Hyde Street." He said he would look to secure funding from the County Council for the flashing lights, but its financial position was so precarious that it would be difficult. And there is a picture of Councillor Martin Todd and also the fading 20 mile an hour sign.
Brilliant Repair Cafe gets off to a flying start, and there are pictures of volunteers serving tea and cake, repairing a bike, a mobile phone, an old radio, and working at a sewing machine. Winchester Repair Cafe is off to a flying start with around 100 happy customers who've been helped with items ranging from sun loungers to vacuum cleaners. The Repair Cafe launched in April and is now open and the second Saturday of every month at Badger Farm Community Centre and Unit 12 in Winnell. Organisers Hannah Henshaw, Rebecca Hare and Ali Cochrane introduced the project to help residents reduce waste and be more sustainable. The cafe has a growing number of volunteers, with around 40 regulars on hand to help visitors fix their household items, such as radios, lamps, holy jumpers, in addition to IT support. Co-organiser and project lead at Action Hampshire, Hannah Henshaw, said, "It's going really well and we've had such a positive response, with all feedback praising how helpful, friendly and welcoming the service is. We've got lots of people booking in advance, which is great, and some walk-ins too. There's a wonderful community feel. It's a really lovely atmosphere for anyone visiting, even if that's just for coffee and cake, and the volunteers seem to love it and clearly enjoy it. There's a lot of interest in the local area and a willingness to reduce the amount going into landfill. So many people want to do more. There are businesses around for significant repairs, but people often don't know what to do with their common household items. We're always keen to find more volunteers, particularly for electronic items, bikes and specialist jobs like clocks and metalwork." Attica Freeman from St Cross made a trip to this month's Repair Cafe. She said, "It was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. All the volunteers are fabulous. There was an area for textiles, electronics, IT and computers, bikes and other things, and they were busy. You don't just sit there and they do the work, you learn how to do it yourself. Transferable skills, so if your toaster breaks or your kettle isn't working, you can check out the basics yourself. Visitors will get a first-class service and meet some great people, all while something is being rescued from the dump." Hampshire County Council's waste prevention team has funded Winchester Repair Cafe's first year, covering venue hire, equipment costs and insurance, but donations are encouraged to help the cafe become self-sustainable. An advisory group also monitors bookings so to prepare the needed parts and equipment for the upcoming workshop. Winchester Repair Cafe is open the second Saturday of every month from 10 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. at Badger Farm Community Centre and 2 to 4:30 p.m. at Unit 12 in Winnell. The next session will be on Saturday, July the 8th.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements, then the Christian comment, letters, Chronicle comment, first person and Belgara. So we start with the death announcements. Barney, Georgina Barney, died peacefully at home, aged 87. Bullock, Brian James Bullock, died on the 23rd of May, aged 89. Collins, Barbara Nellie Collins, died peacefully on the 9th of June, aged 88. Conchie, Beryl Conchie, died peacefully on the 10th of June, aged 93. Culhane, Rory Michael Culhane, died at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 20th of May, aged 62. Emery, Patricia Emery, died peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 9th of June. Howard, Daniel Robert Nicholas Howard, died peacefully in Cornwall, aged 56. Stratton, Dorothea Stratton, died peacefully at HC1 Nursing Home in Chandler's Ford, aged 96. And Swanston, Pat Swanston, died peacefully at home on the 8th of June. And now, David, I think we've got Christian comment, please.
Yes, this is written by Nigel Hemming, who is the senior pastor at Winchester Vineyard Church. He is talking about emotionally healthy psalms. Just over a month ago, I underwent a coronary bypass operation. It all went well, and I'm steadily moving through my recovery, supported by family and friends and some fantastic NHS staff. I had never even spent a night in hospital before this, and honestly, I was quite daunted at the prospect of being in an unfamiliar place, away from my family, whilst also experiencing pain and discomfort. It mostly went okay, but there were a couple of nights when I felt decidedly lonely and quite uncertain about what would happen next. The thing is, I quite like being in control. I like to know what's happening, and if there's a problem, I appreciate being able to do something about it. In this case, as sometimes happens in life, that just wasn't possible. And in those darker moments where I wasn't sure what was happening to me, I didn't doubt God's existence, but I did find myself wondering just how close he was. All of this calls to mind the Psalms of Lament. These writers pour out highly emotive language, crying to God in desperation, complaining and questioning where he is in their situation. Their starkness seems irreverent or even dishonouring, and yet there are 60 such songs out of the 150 in Israel's prayer book. They are clearly there for a reason. Bono, the rock singer and activist, writes movingly, "Abandonment and displacement are the stuff of my favourite psalms. The Psalter may be a font of gospel music, but for me it's despair that the psalmist really reveals, and the nature of his special relationship with God. Honesty, even to the point of anger. These prayers are essential for those who are really going through it. They remind us that life is not straightforward, and that even though we don't always feel God close, he is always faithful. They encourage us to grow in emotional literacy and give us the language to be nothing less than real as we express our feelings to him. Psalm 13 is one classic example. How long, Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? Reading through this and other laments helps me put my own suffering into context and reminds me that God is big enough for all my emotions. In their beautiful book, Sheltering Mercy, Dan Wilt and Ryan Whitaker Smith write prayers which aim to creatively respond to and mirror the text of each psalm. Their version of Psalm 13 is called A Voice in the Dark, and last section is a great prayer for those who are struggling. I cling to your goodness, it's all I have. I lift my voice in the dark, praising you forever, praising your words forever, though you are silent, for your nearness, though you are far. For this affliction shall soon end, and I will bear a weight of glory beyond compare. Words of reality and hope for those who need some encouragement today.
Thank you. That concludes the Christian comment. And now we'll move on to letters to the editor. Nikki, you've got the first, please.
And this is from Faith Hill, and it's headed, New Government Needs to Sort Out NHS. Our MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford says people don't want a general election. I believe Mr. Bryan is wrong on this. We urgently need a change of government to rescue the NHS and sort out social care. In the first week of the COVID-19 inquiry, we have heard devastating evidence of the rundown state of the NHS prior to the start of the pandemic. Figures were presented to the inquiry showing falling life expectancy across the population, linked to funding cuts to both the NHS and to social care brought about by years of austerity under the Conservatives since 2010. And now the COVID-19 pandemic is behind us, this Conservative government is not doing nearly enough to put the NHS back on track, and it has next to no policies on social care. We urgently need a new government prioritising the health and well-being of us all. A general election can't come soon enough. For me and many others in the constituency, the sooner the better. And that from Faith Hill, Velmore Road, Chandler's Ford.
Pharmacy floors. At the age of 92, unfortunately, I now require quite a lot of medication to keep my body ticking over. Living where I do, I have used the pharmacy in the Broadway, owned now for many years by Lloyd's Pharmacies. For me, as a blue badge holder, the parking is very convenient, and I can usually park within a few yards of the front door. Years ago, when the business was privately owned, a new prescription would be made up after a short wait of about 10 minutes, and there were several chairs available for the convenience of customers. There used to be another pharmacy within a few yards in Silver Hill, also owned by Lloyd's, but this closed some time ago. At one time, it was quite normal to be asked to talk to a pharmacist about one's medication on an annual basis. This has not happened recently. Over the years, the time taken to be served has hugely increased, and one time needed for a prescription to be dispensed has lengthened from minutes through 5 working days to now nearly 2 weeks. It's quite normal to hear customers ask to come back, as not all the items requested are available. And I now regularly wait at least 20 minutes in a queue to be served. In addition, there is now only one single chair for those who have difficulty standing, and only exceedingly rarely is there more than one person serving, however long the queue. It is noticeable how the items available for sale are but a fraction of what used to be on the show, because customers will not wait to be served. Over the past few weeks, Lloyd's closes at 3 p.m. rather than the old time of 5:30 p.m. and now exists a notice to say the business is being sold from one very dissatisfied customer, name and address supplied, in Winchester.
This is a letter about water pollution. I have read with interest the carefully researched article and newsletter by Steve Bryan. The water authorities had clearly explained to him the processes involved in managing sewage and heavy rainfalls. All plausible excuses were given to him for the catastrophic pollution we are experiencing. The reasons for contaminating our oceans and rivers were laid at the feet of our Victorian sewers. The true reason for this outrage was never mentioned in the article. Let me offer an answer to the root causes. Millions given to wealthy shareholders and inordinately greedy executives since Tory privatisation under Thatcher should have been spent on updating the infrastructure over the past 3 decades. If that had happened to a public service unsuited to private profiteering, we would have had cleaner rivers and oceans. And that was written by David Naylor of Hairstock in Winchester.
And this from Stephen Percy, headed Federal UK. I heartily endorse the case for a federal Britain made by your correspondent Robert Craig last week, Chronicle June 15th. Following the Second World War, Britain played a crucial role in establishing West Germany, uniting the British, French and American sectors. We also advised the emerging nation on a new basic law, effectively a written constitution which was approved in 1949. Two critical aspects of the political architecture were a federal system and a form of proportional representation. The emerging political culture also emphasised consensus, the avoidance of extremism, industrial democracy, and the concept of the social market. These structures and culture have surely been key to the economic, social, and political success of Germany ever since, including the ambitious reunifications of East and West in 1990. What a pity that, having played such a significant role in helping to shape a resurgent and dynamic Germany, we have so singularly failed to reform our own archaic political system at home. And we can see the consequences all around us. And that from Stephen Percy, Easton, Winchester.
Margaret Gaunt writes, Shop Memories. Once again, I see that the old Barlow's butcher shop in Stockbridge Road is to have a new owner who hopes to open up as a wine bar in the future. I have many memories of the shop with its large front windows displaying all its choice meats, products, etc. I also gave a good view of the butcher boy spreading the fresh sawdust on the shop floor and giving me a wink while the manager had his back turned. Who would have guessed that this would lead to when the builder starts work on the premises? Who knows what graffiti and proof of the building's past history he will uncover? Hopefully the future owner will read this letter and give the new business a name relevant to the site and its past uses. I hope it will help the other owners in this area of Stockbridge Road keep it alive and bright as it always was, with Smith the Grocers, Chippy North's, Bookmaker Bert, Mr. Rovey the newsagent, Barlow's Butchers, along with other independent traders. And that's from Margaret Gaunt of Burriton Road, Hairstock, Winchester.
Graham Tillotson writes about council shambles. Is our city council's administration in chaos? Following two separate engagements with its waste management departments, it's obvious to me that it must be. The first involved signing up for a garden waste bin, for which I paid in December, but didn't receive until early April, despite many chasing calls. The second was the simplest request for a new bung to replace one missing on a recently issued communal wheelie bin. But instead of getting a bung, they brought a brand new bin. In these dealings with WCC, here's what I've discovered. In the Garden Waste Department, no records are kept of the status on taxpayers' queries, so both parties must always start from scratch. You to explain, the staff member to investigate. One staff member should never have been in a customer-facing role, so disinterested was she in helping, let alone showing initiative. Every time I rang, staff have struggled to find my address, which is strange bearing in mind its simplicity. When pointing out that council tax bills find me easily enough, I learned the WCC use more than one database for taxpayers, which is confusing and inefficient. Nobody answering the phone in the Garden Waste Department has any authority to directly contact the bin supplier, Biffa, deferring instead to some operations department where our bin was stuck. Payment records are poor. One staff member concluded I hadn't yet paid, despite my having their payment receipt. A call to WCC was answered by someone who didn't know the names of either the chief executive or the mayor. After the first incident, I wrote to WCC's chief executive, copying our mayor and councillor Martin Todd, pointing out the shambles I'd encounter. Only councillor Todd bothered to reply. That's from Graham Tillotson in Chilbolton Avenue, Winchester.
And after that happy, encouraging letter, We'll move on to the Chronicle editorial comment, please, Nikki.
Headed, Worrying Changes at Station Taxi Rank. Our front page story outlines the dispute between taxi drivers at Winchester Railway Station. Previously, Hackney carriages had the right to pick up customers from the forecourt without the need to pre-book. You got off the train, left the station and got the first available cab. At the start of this month, South Western Railways made some changes. The main rank is now for pre-booked taxis only, mainly operated by Wintax, with the Hackneys moved over the road to a much shorter rank. The changes have caused confusion for customers. There was little, if any, public consultation over these changes by South Western Railway, who in response to our inquiries issued a statement that didn't answer any of our questions. What we have seen is a very important public space being treated as if it was private property. The attitude seems to be South Western Railway is a private company, Wintax is a private company, the Hackney carriages are privately owned, therefore how is it of any public interest? That is the wrong and a worrying attitude. One can only hope we will not see a similar privatisation of public space when Silverhill gets going at some point in the hopefully not too distant future.
Yes. Now we have first person, please, Norma. Thank you.
New life, the beehives. And this is by Khalid Aziz. Funny old thing, nature. In the last 6 months or so, my bees have been as much up and down as the UK economy. As last summer gave way to autumn, all was not well with one of my two hives. They seemed weak, their flying desultory. I fed them sugar in the form of fondant and the consistency of marzipan supplied by the estimable Becky's bees. See what she's did there. In Andover, it comes in plastic wrap blocks and you cut a hole in it and lay it on the top of the hive. Bees love it. For a while, they seemed to rally. I thought they were going to pull through until I realised that this was far from the case. The extra activity was in fact wasps, the beekeeper's nemesis. Sensing weakness, wasps invade a hive, rob what's left of any honey, and kill any weakened bees that puts up resistance. Eventually, you're left with soulless, empty hive. Never mind, I still had a hive left with a goodly amount of stores. Surely they would, as had both of my hives in several winters, come through, boosted by an autumn feed of fondant and nicely wrapped up against the chill of the dead months. Our topsy-turvy weather had other ideas. The cold snap with more than a week of sub-zero temperatures caught my surviving hive unawares. February is always a nervous time for beekeepers. This is the time when the colony, 60,000 strong, is at its summer peak, when the workers are going gangbusters to produce honey and will dwindle to below 10,000. Above all else, the colony's solitary queen has to survive. Workers will cluster round her to keep her warm and safe so that in February she can start laying again. I knew something was up. It was far too cold to open the hive up for an inspection. That would have added an extra chill to an already threatened hive. As the weather warmed slightly, there was a little activity and then nothing. Finally, opening the hive confirmed that I would have to report to the National Bee Database that I had lost both my hives. I was beeless. Come April, a fellow beekeeper whom annually I lend my honey extractor gave me some spare bees, which I established in one of the empty hives. They thrived. Then nature worked its magic. It's been an incredible year for swarms. No doubt as a result of the bees' world sensing that it had a tough winter and they had to replace failed colonies. Swarming is in progress, whereby the old queen departs with half the colony having created new queens who emerge from their special cells a day or two later. The first new queen to emerge goes round the hive killing her rivals, the only time she uses her sting. Then she flies off to mate and return to start laying eggs. Mrs. A returned from a dog walk and announced that she'd spotted an easily accessible swarm which had pitched up on a low branch of a tree, while, as they do, scout bees went off to look for a suitable new home. The trick is to catch that swarm with its queen. Within half an hour, I'd shaken the watermelon-sized blob of bees into a large cardboard box. Another half an hour, and I had rehoused the bees in the other empty hive. Hey presto, I was back to being the proud possessor of two colonies once again. I always keep a bait hive scented with lemongrass oil. Most year it catches nothing, but a week later I observed that another swarm had taken up residence, so I am now a three-hive beekeeper. Nature has triumphed once again, so comforting in this uncertain world. And a good reason to be happy.
David, you've got a couple of items from Belgarum, please.
Yes. First one is entitled Potholes History Lesson. It could be the only benefit to having potholes. The deterioration of the road surface on a historic Winchester street has again revealed the road surfacing from 200 years ago. Several potholes on Hyde Street have shown the wooden setts, the bricks that once made up road surfaces on busy roads until the 19th century and the introduction of tarmac. The setts were laid to minimise road noise, help preserve cart and carriage wheels, and be easier on the hooves of workhorses and oxen. The setts were last revealed in early 2020, prompting a comment from Councillor Rob Hunby, Hampshire County Council's then executive member for Economy, Transport and Environment, who said, "Around 200 years ago, Hyde Street was the main road north out of Winchester, and the potholes have revealed that it was surfaced for this heavy traffic with wooden setts. This is a fascinating glimpse of a past road surfacing more common in towns during the late 19th and early 20th century. They were protected with pitch before they were put in place, which preserved them from the elements, and in this case were buried when the road was relaid. It is not known if the wooden setts lie under the tarmac on other roads in the city, or whether they have been removed over the years." And there's a picture of one of these sets which looks a little bit like a footprint in a way, with you can see the wooden bits that make it up. Second article is called Parking Problems in City Car Park. There are more ways to pay for your car parking in Winchester these days. As well as cash, there is a phone app called Ringo that is highly useful for people who do not want to carry around pockets or purses full of coins. Sometimes, however, things go awry and calls for a bit of a walk. Chronicle reader Stephen Perriman spotted these two pay stations, of which there are pictures here, at the Cattle Market car park off Worthy Lane. One for cash and one for Ringo. Both were out of order recently. A note helpfully directed people to the pay station on the Andover Road section of the car park. It's quite a walk for the elderly or those with limited mobility.
Thank you. Now we move on to the announcements. We start with what's on. There's a couple of items. Well, firstly, let's remind everybody that the Winchester Hat Fair returns next Friday, the 30th of June, in the evening, and then all day Saturday, the 1st of July. It's at various venues through the city. For more information, you can telephone 01962 844 600. That's 01962 844 600. For those of you who recall Neil Diamond, there's a Neil Diamond tribute act by somebody called Fisher Stevens, who's apparently the most famous Neil Diamond tribute, and that's at the Mayflower Theatre, Southampton, and that's on Friday the 30th of June at 7 p.m. For the Mayflower box office, telephone 02380 711 811. That's 02380 711 811. And in Stockbridge, there's a choir concert by Southern Voices. It's at St. Peter's Church in Stockbridge on July the 8th at 7:30 p.m. Southern Voices is enjoying a renaissance under a new conductor and will perform a summer concert of madrigals, folk songs and jazz. Next year the choir will celebrate its 40th anniversary. Tickets are £16 and can be obtained from Ticketsource, that's all one word, .co.uk/southern-voices. That's ticketsource.co.uk/southern-voices. Now, lighting up time ends Friday the 23rd of June at 4:51am and begins at 9:24pm. And next Wednesday the 28th of June, it ends at 4:53am and begins at 9:24pm. And if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. And the number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And now we continue with items of general news, Nikki.
And this one headed nautical theme to open air theatre. And it's accompanied by a wonderful photograph headed OOR, open air theatre. Cast from Treasure Island and HMS Binafore. Two of the productions in a festival of open air theatre coming to Winchester, and they're wonderfully dressed. The costumes are fantastic. Pirates with eye patches, one leg, tricorn hats, women in wonderful dresses and sort of what might be called a riding habit, another woman dressed as a pirate, full-on boots, belts, buckles, swords, and a woman dressed as a sailor with all the stripes, red stripy socks, stripy bit round the middle, hats, the whole works. Anyway, here's the words. A festival of open-air theatre is coming to Winchester this summer. From Tuesday, July the 11th to Saturday, July the 22nd, Chesil Theatre and Winchester Musicals and Opera Society, WMOS, are joining forces to put on a series of outdoor shows at Winchester College. First up is the Chesil Theatre's production of Treasure Island. The classic tale of buried treasure by Robert Louis Stevenson has been adapted by Phil Wilmot. The cast of 38, including 19 youngsters, many from the Chesil Youth Theatre, are supported by a stage crew of set builders, costumiers, sound and lighting experts, plus an all-important fighter ranger. Director Sarah Hawkins said, "The play is a puffball of parrots, pirates and plunder, and has the general jollity of pantomime. Perfect summer entertainment for young and old alike." As part of the Chesil Outreach Programme, opening night on Tuesday, July the 11th, is a gala performance for those in the community who may not normally have access to theatre. For more information or to book, go to chesiltheatre.org.uk. That's all one word, lowercase. Continuing the sea theme, WMOS will Gilbert and Sullivan's HMS Pinafore with a difference. HMS Pinafore is on from Tuesday, July the 18th, to Saturday, July the 22nd. Tickets cost £16 and are available at wmos.org.uk, and WMOS is in capitals.
On a very different note, tackling the death taboo, the University of Winchester has assembled a panel of experts for a public seminar on death, dying and bereavement. The free event, entitled Ending Well, will be held on June the 28th and aims to explore the different perspectives on these difficult topics and start a conversation about dying with dignity and why it is so important. The panel will be chaired by Dr. Lara Alloway, Chief Medical Officer and Palliative Medical Consultant at Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation, and Ian Cameron, Chief Executive of St. Michael's Hospice in Basingstoke. Panel members will include Dr. Anna Wilkinson, a consultant in palliative care, GP Charlotte Hutching, who is also in the clinical director for the Hampshire Integrated Care Board, and Reverend Ruth Metcalf, chaplain at Hampshire Hospitals Foundation. Alongside the seminar, the audience will also be able to take part in a question and answer session. Dr. Alloway said, "In our wider society, death and dying is often neglected in conversation, which many people struggle to broach with family and friends. Lessening this taboo, though, is so important. Through this seminar, we're hoping to share thoughts on encouraging compassionate conversations within our communities, supporting a culture for everyone to feel comfortable talking about death, dying, and why it matters. The seminar is part of the series being held at the University of Winchester, Hampshire Hospitals, NHS Foundation, Trust, and local hospices.
This is entitled Road Engineer's Prickly Customer. A highways engineer was given an unexpected surprise this week when they found a hedgehog had taken up residence in a drainage pipe. The Hampshire Highways engineer was on a call out to a missing drainage cover in Eastleigh when he found the hedgehog tucked up inside. A specialist was called to carefully remove the animal from the pipe. It was taken to a nearby vet. In a tweet, Hampshire Highways said, apart from some dehydration, she's doing really well and is on 5 days of antibiotics. The hedgehog will be returned to the area where it was found, and there is a picture of the hedgehog tucked down the drain, looking quite comfy, really.
To under their own, and this one, Micah tuning, yes, 400 fires in 6 months. After attending nearly 400 house fires this year, the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Fire and Rescue Service (HIWFRS) is urging residents to ensure they have working smoke alarms. HIWFRS has issued the warning in line with the National Fire Chiefs Council (NFCC) Home Fire Safety Week from June the 12th to the 18th. Firefighters are concerned that as many households continue to struggle with the cost of living, people may have bought products that could increase their risk of a fire in the home, or have decided to save money by cutting back on essential maintenance checks on fuel appliances such as boilers, open fires and wood burners. These appliances should be tested regularly to make sure they work, and carbon monoxide alarms should also be fitted in the home to provide an early warning of any problems. The Hampshire Service has attended nearly 400 house fires this year, ahead of the summer months. Its prevention manager, Tracy Webb, said, a few simple checks and changes can help keep homes safer, save lives and reduce injuries. We advise fitting at least one smoke alarm on every floor of the home, and ideally these should be fitted in the rooms that are used most often, as this is where a fire is most likely to start. We offer additional support to fit smoke alarms for those who are most vulnerable to fire via our safe and well visits. Prevention work is at the heart of all fire and rescue service work, and we are here to help.
Cricket answer to takeaway dream. A chef has finally opened her own Thai takeaway van after months spent finding the right location. Safina Harris previously cooked at Winchester College, but is now pursuing her dream of running her own foodie business, opening Safina's Thai at Sparsholt Cricket Club on Friday the 9th of June. Originally, the Thai chef planned to open the van in her front garden in Woodham Close back in March, unaware of what the rules were. Safina phoned the Winchester City Council, who she said gave her the go-ahead. But just 2 weeks before the van was supposed to open, the council called to say that she wasn't allowed to open the van on site and would need to move. Safina, 44, said, I accepted that we'd been given the wrong information, but I couldn't find anywhere to move the truck. Locals had menus and started ordering when we couldn't open. It was so stressful and it took so much energy. I loved to cook and I wanted to get started. After trying different places across the village, the chef finally has success with a cricket club in Locks Lane, just a couple of minutes away from her home, following a suggestion from a friend who works there. Safina said, the cricket club really loved the idea and they were lovely and helpful. I had to start again with the water and the electricity supply, but it's amazing that we're open now and I'm so relieved after all the problems. I'd never been to the cricket club before the launch, and it was really nice and posh there. It's beautiful. I'm so pleased. People told me not to give up and that they were waiting for me to open. We were non-stop busy for the launch. People are lovely here and are so happy with the takeaway. Visitors are saying it's amazing and their new Friday treat. I love it at Winchester College. It's luxurious. But one day I just thought I really need to do my own thing. I quit my job and bought the food truck in November, giving me 4 months to prepare. Then we had the problems and I was so down, but we finally open. Safina's Thai is open from 4:30 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. until September, before Safina goes back to Thailand with the intention of opening the van up again next year throughout the cricket season. Dishes include Thai green curry, masmam curry, pad krakow, pad siui, stir fry and mixed vegetables, stir as well as starters, sides and dipping sauces. To pre-book, WhatsApp 07 4691 78330. For more information, go to Safina's Thai on Facebook. And there's a lovely picture of Safina with her notice outside her van. And she doesn't look 44.
This is entitled Mums Hit the Heights for Hospital Fund. A group of 30 women have smashed their fundraising target after tackling the highest peaks in England, Scotland and Wales. The group, Mothers in Arms, was started following the death of a newborn baby at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester last summer. Max Ashford died shortly after birth from a rare infection called listeriosis. The group came together with Max's mother, Jen Ashford, to take on the Three Peaks Challenge in his memory and to raise money for the neonatal unit at Florence Portal House. Among the group of 30 women who set off last Sunday were friends and family of the Ashfords and 18 parents from Twyford School. Lucy Arnott, Chief Executive of Hampshire Medical Fund, said, "We are absolutely thrilled and enormously grateful to this inspirational group of ladies who have enabled the Hampshire Medical Fund to purchase 4 major pieces of equipment for the neonatal unit in Winchester Hospital." And there's a very happy picture of the 30 ladies sitting atop Ben Nevis, all with their arms triumphantly in the air.
Parish Council lays on Green Homes Fair for locals. Itchen Valley Parish Council has held a Green Homes Fair to encourage residents to reduce their domestic carbon emissions. Held on Sunday, July the 18th at Itchen Abbas and Abington Village Hall, the fair attracted more than 50 residents to discuss sustainable energy and how to make their homes greener. Attendees heard presentations from C2 Renewables on solar panels and air source heat pumps. They were also able to visit stands to talk to representatives from Buildpass Limited on retrofitting, Winchester Superhomes Initiative, Winchester Action on Climate Crisis, Alsford New Leaf and Kirkman Recycling. A number of locals with recent real-life experience also attended to share their knowledge of going greener. The event was also an opportunity for residents to examine the recently installed solar system at the village hall, which is comprised of 36 solar panels and 3 batteries. Itchen Valley Parish Councillor Steve Percy said, "With the cost of energy rising and installation costs falling, now is the time for us all to think about doing our bit to address the climate crisis."
Call to open up city's neglected green space. A nature reserve that snakes into the heart of Winchester should be made more attractive to the public, a meeting heard. The town forum was told that Winchester should make more of Winnell Moors that stretch from north from Derngate. Nicola Rule called for a plan to improve public access to the 64-hectare reserve, which is run by Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust. She told the town forum that too few people were aware of the area. Among her suggestions were a manned kiosk at the entrance of Derngate in the style of the National Trust, more benches and an honesty box for donations. Miss Rule, who said that there should be information boards about the 750,000 flood defences on Durngage, which will protect the city centre. She also called for better connection from the nearby city centre to the reserve. Councillor John Tippett Cooper said, "It's refreshing and lovely to hear such a passionate extolling of its virtues." City Council leader Martin Todd said, "Winnall Moors is a special area. I will need to check what role we have in how it's managed." Councillor Todd said that one of the aspects of the redevelopment of Friarsgate is opening up walking routes through that part of town and making the city more porous and walkable. Such efforts have been made in the past with the Water Vole Trail, and the entrance has been highlighted with a wooden structure. Winnall Moors consists of wet grassland, reed beds, wet woodland and streams making up the River Itchen. It has a range of wildlife including kingfisher and roe deer. Birds include reed warblers, sedge warblers and chiffchaffs, and the flora include marsh marigolds, yellow flag irises and cuckoo flowers. And there are a couple of pictures, one of the Winnall Moors and beside it a picture of Councillor John Tippett Cooper, and then there's a picture of the entrance to Winnall Moors next to the city floodgate defences. And yes, the moors look really pretty.
Wow. This is entitled Austin Figures Harp Returns to Its Historic Home. A 250-year-old harp with historical ties to Jane Austen has been brought back to life and returned to the celebrated author's home village for a special performance. The beautifully ornate instrument was once owned by the novelist's cousin Eliza, whose vivacious, flirty character and playing was the inspiration for Mary Crawford in Mansfield Park. It was tracked down and restored by Mike Parker, a historical musicologist, who played it and some of Eliza's own music at an intimate recital this weekend in Chawton. In bringing the harp to Austin's home, Mr. Parker was fulfilling a quest that took him from East London to Belgium in search of the instrument, which had sat collecting dust for more than 200 years. "It's not in perfect condition," he said, "but the incredible thing is the fact that it has survived. When I got it, it was pretty derelict, it was grotty, it had 150 years of nicotine on it. The neck had been badly broken, it needed to be fixed. Once I got it tuned and up to pitch, what came out of it was this beautiful, lovely little sound. It was a voice from the past. I heard a sound that modern instruments just don't have. It sang when the world was different." Eliza's harp is the oldest known working pedal harp in the UK, Mr. Parker says. Mr. Parker revealed he stumbled across the harp's existence while he was researching Eliza's collection of manuscripts. While visiting a collector, he was tipped off that Eliza's harp had in fact survived and was being offered for sale by one of her descendants. So he travelled to Belgium to buy it and has breathed new life into its strings by repairing it. He said Eliza's single-pedal action harp is 5 foot inches tall, while modern double-action harps are 6 foot 6. He added, "It plays 2 octaves lighter. It produces a very bright, silvery sound. It's a more gentle sound. It wasn't meant to be played in a large room, but in salons. It was for at-home entertainment, something you might hear in French drawing rooms." In his Saturday evening recital at Chawton Village Hall, which raised money for stroke charity Headway, Mr. Parker played 3 other historical harps and raised £420 for the charity. And there's a picture of 58-year-old Mr. Parker sitting at the Austin harp, surrounded by 2 other wonderfully ornate harps.
Hat Fair Road Closures. Road closures will be in place during the forthcoming Winchester Hat Fair Outdoor Arts Festival. Celebrating its 48th year, with venues across the city, the festival is the UK's longest continually running outdoors art festival. This year's festival will be smaller, running over 2 days, Friday, June the 30th and Saturday, July the 1st. Events ranging from theatre, music, dance, art and more are set up in the city. This includes the Hush Club Disco, taking place on Saturday, July the 1st from 9 p.m. in the Broadway. Playmakers Top Hat, a showcase of outdoor performance work from the past and present students of University of Winchester, also takes place on Saturday, July the 1st from 1:40 p.m. in the Broadway. In order for the event to take place safely, various road closures will be in place over the weekend. The Broadway and Town Centre area will be affected on Friday from 12 noon to 11 p.m. on Saturday. Basket Lane in its entirety will be closed. On Friday the 30th, from 12:20 p.m. to 12:30 p.m, there will also be temporary traffic hold for the carnival to pass along a 15-metre section of Market Street. Then on Saturday, from 6 a.m. until Sunday 2 a.m, the Broadway will be closed entirely. There will also be parking suspensions on Thursday, June the 29th, from 8 a.m. till Sunday, 2nd July at 3 a.m.
Local concerns fail to derail house extension. A replacement 5-bedroom house in Oliver's Battery has been approved by planners despite 23 objections. Neighbours criticised the proposal, saying it was overdevelopment and out of character for Oliver's Battery Road South. Despite the concerns, the plans were approved by Winchester City Council Planning Committee on Wednesday, June the 14th. The proposal was a reapplication of the scheme last year to extend the existing bungalow. The planning officer report said, "The new scheme is substantially the same as the approved scheme, except that it is now a complete rebuild as the original bungalow was demolished rather than extended, therefore requiring a new application." Belinda Wazieski of Oliver's Battery Road South and Susan Summers of Compton Way spoke in objection. They said, "Two large rear windows overlook into neighbouring homes. It will invade our personal privacy. It has a feeling of want over need and has completely changed the street scene. It has brought many residents out to object." Rona Blundell from Oliver's Battery Council said, "It will have a detrimental impact due to the density and bulk. It would overshadow surrounding properties." Jan Warwick, ward councillor for Badgers Farm and Oliver's Battery, said, "Local residents object to the increased height of the roof. They are concerned it would dominate the street scene and impact the enjoyment of their homes. New developments should blend in seamlessly with the surrounding properties. Concerns have been raised in previous planning committees that the character of Oliver's Battery is being eroded. Many small bungalows are being extended and becoming family homes." Planning agent Louise Cutt said, "There is no valid reason to refuse this application. The decision to build a new house is due to advice from builders and planners because of the poor condition of the previous building. There is no material difference in the plans. The new building is highly sustainable." Councillor Brian Lamming, who represents the Badgers Farm and Oliver's Battery Ward, said, "This raises a lot of questions. It will clearly impact the area. It's a large building on a small plot and will dominate the houses on both sides. I'm not sure how to vote on this one." Councillor Frank Pearson said, "It's 90% complete, so it would be perverse to ask them to tear it down and resubmit. The plan was permitted unanimously." And there's a picture of this said house, which does tower over the existing bungalow. And there's also a picture of Councillor Jan Warwick.
New Turkish restaurant is to open in July. The owner of a chain of Turkish restaurants said that its Winchester branch will open near the end of July, following a series of delays. As previously reported, Turquoise, I think that's how you pronounce it, was set to open in a historic building on Jury Street last September. Before the opening date was postponed until mid-February, the opening was then pushed back again, with plans to open it at an unspecified date between the end of April and middle of May. Now, Turquoise founder and owner, Sevdet Mutlu, has said that the restaurant will open at the unconfirmed date at the end of July. With the delays caused by issues with a series of electronic dartboards he hopes to have for when the restaurant opens. Mr. Mutlu said, "We are still waiting on the development of interactive darts. We've got four games already programmed. We are still waiting for another four to do before we can go for launch." Turquoise will sell authentic char-grilled food, freshly prepared on site, as well as wine from a carefully crafted menu. Mr. Mutlu has previously told the Chronicle that the restaurant will provide 140 covers with a mezzanine area. It has also created 14 jobs. The restaurant will be located in a historical Tudor building on Jury Street, which was previously the home of Loch Fyne, which closed in 2020.
Charity Chief set to retire from his role. A major Winster charity has announced the retirement of its chief executive after 10 years in the role. Lawyer Clive Cook has been in post since December 2013 and will retire in March 2024 at the end of the financial year. St John's is one of the country's oldest charities with over nine centuries of history and years of experience supporting older people of limited means. The charity helps to support older people in the community to live well. They provide services such as Home Share, a scheme which aims to match an older householder who has a spare room with a younger lodger who can dedicate 10 hours a week to helping around the house. They also run a dementia support service in partnership with Dementia UK, which supports people living with dementia aged over 55, as well as their families and carers. St John's has been building new almshouses off Colebrook Street. It closed its dementia unit at Moorside and plans to repurpose the building. Roger Bright, Chair of St John's, said, "Clive has worked under three St John's chairs since he came to the charity, and I have been working with him for more than 3 years. It has been a great pleasure to deal with Clive. His actions and approach have always been informed by the charity's values, and he has the best interests of St John's benefice and staff at heart. I know we will miss him, and he will miss us."
Exotic animals star of Summer Fete fundraiser. A charity farm raised more than £3,000 at its annual open day to support adults with learning disabilities. The Boas Project opened its doors to the public on Saturday, June the 3rd. Visitors to Hill Farm near Sutton Scotney were able to get up close to a range of unusual animals, including an African pygmy hedgehog, giant tortoise, bumblebee royal python, a barn owl brought in by a visiting zoo, and feathers, fangs and furies. Other highlights include a plant sale, tractor rides, craft stalls, fun games, brass band and a chance to pet one of Boaz's resident donkeys. Manager Stuart Palmer said, "We are more used to egg-laying chickens, donkeys and sheep at Boaz than exotic animals, but it was great fun to host a mini zoo this year. We're grateful to the Smith family for managing the visiting zoo and looking after the exotic animals so well, and indeed everyone who made the day such a success." The open day and plant sales comes just a week after the first Boaz charity golf day raised a further £2,000. Now the charity is focused on recruiting new volunteers to join a small army of unpaid helpers. Stuart said, "Volunteering at Boaz suits a broad range of ages and backgrounds. Volunteers can come for a whole day or half a day and work alongside staff and people with mild to moderate learning disabilities. No experience is needed, just a desire to help. Activities include horticulture, animal care, crafts, woodwork and cooking. A home-cooked lunch is served every day, followed by a gentle walk with donkeys around this beautiful arable farm. Coming to Boaz provides an opportunity to focus on what's truly important: nature, people, relationships and appreciating life lived in the moment." The Boaz Project was set up in 2007 to provide adults with learning disabilities with a therapeutic learning environment and an opportunity to work on the land. Boaz now helps more than 30 adults, and there are a number of pictures, and I'm not, well, I should apologise for some of the comments underneath it, but you'll see what I mean in a moment. There's one picture of one of the gentlemen holding the bumblebee royal python, and it's known underneath as slippery customer makes friends. There's an owl with people looking at a lady who's looking quite surprised, and it says, "Well, owl be darned." And then there's a little boy with his mum looking at a giant tortoise. Shell shock for this little lad. And there's a tractor with all the children on it and smiling and waving. And then they're hitching a ride on another tractor. And they all look as having great fun. And there's a lot of small children, and they're all standing on an upturned bucket, and they all look as though they're all trying to get on the bucket at once and having a lovely time.
This is entitled "Big Thank You to Volunteers Helping Prison Families." Dedicated volunteers who help at a charity based at a prison were thanked for their work over tea and cake. The award-winning Invisible Walls, a prison-based family support service run out of HMP Winchester by Spurgeon's Children's Charity, hosted an awards event to thank their team members on June the 7th. The charity has more than 70 volunteers who help facilitate the visitor centre at the prison, including a tea room and play area for children. The service has helped 590 fathers in custody since 2016, keeping families together and reducing reoffending. The Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Angela Clear, attended the event and gave her thanks to the team. She said, "It must be a difficult time for so many when their loved ones end up in prison. That's where the brilliant dedication of all of you, staff and volunteers, help so much. You help them to talk to their loved ones and make them feel better. The benefits of this facility you provide is certainly something. Well done. It shows on your faces and through what you have said to me today what it means. You are a beacon of good practice." Jim Bourke, or Burke perhaps, Governor of HMP Winchester since 2018, also joined the event to give his thanks. He said that the service was vital as it helps to prevent reoffending by helping with rehabilitation. He said the thing that contributes the most by a long way is contact with family or significant other. That can only be managed to the level it is in Winchester because of you. I want to say thank you for all the work you do. Volunteers and service staff were treated to cake as well as being handed awards for long service, enthusiasm, cleaning and for being positive role models and more. Prison Family Services Manager Victoria Baird said, "Volunteers are essential to the successful running of our service. We could not do what we do without them. They are the first point of contact for those visiting HMP Winchester and offer vital kindness and support. They help with the running of our specialist visits, homework club and parenting course delivery, and without their contribution and commitments, there would be no provision for children and families during their visit. Children and families can arrive fretful from travelling, unsure about the process of the visit. By offering such a welcoming environment, our volunteers help to reduce these anxieties, making the visit less stressful and much more enjoyable for the whole family."
Japanese restaurant still on course for July move. Work on moving a Japanese restaurant to its new premises has been described by its owner as a slow but steady. Kyoto Kitchen owner Miff Kayum announced that the restaurant would be moving from Parchment Street to Bridge Street last month. Since then, work has been progressing on the interior of the former pub Bridge Street House. The new restaurant, to be called Kyoto Kitchen and Rooms, will include 6 bedrooms. Mr. Kayum expects it to be up and running in early July. In a Facebook post, he said, "Well, it's been a crazy few weeks of refurbing, and a bit of a cliche in that everything we have touched has generated extra but unintended work. But we persevered and had to scale back some of the plans. Don't worry, it will still look amazing, as the space has such charm and character. And I can now finally say that we will be moving out of Parchment Street at the end of the month. Slow but steady progress on the refurb at Bridge Street. We're back on track for an early July opening. Last month, Mr. Kayum explained that the plan is to make the area next to the bar a private dining room and to reduce the bar down to create extra seating. Kyoto Kitchen opened in 2012 and specialises in sushi and sashimi dishes, including its Winchester roll, thought to be the world's first sushi roll to use wasabi leaf instead of seaweed.
Diesel Dew, Watercress Line lays on a rail feast. The Watercress Line Diesel Gala event will be returning to the historical railway next month with 3 days of heritage diesel traction action, lasting from July the 14th to July the 16th. Visitors will have the opportunity to enjoy the sights and sounds of both heritage and modern diesel traction and enjoy rides on an intensive diesel train service operating over steeply graded line with visiting and home fleet locomotives. Among the gala's visiting fleet will be the Class 33/0 D6515, and in brackets 33012, Lieutenant Jenny Lewis, RN, courtesy of the 71A Locomotive Group, based at the Swanage Railway. Originally built in July 1960, the D6515 was delivered to Hither Green Depot on the southeastern section of the southern region. It also spent time allocated to Eastleigh and Stewart's Lane depots. The Watercress Line will be announcing other visiting locomotives over the coming month and has confirmed that 6 of its home fleet trains will be operating, including Class 47 47579 James Knightel GC and Class 0808288 Phoenix. In addition, the gala weekend will offer rides on the miniature railway and the chance to visit the viewing galleries, a goods shed exhibition and society stands and displays. The beer junction will be open in Ropley, real ale and wine and soft drinks available for purchase. Other refreshments will also be available from the West Country Buffet at and Tea Junction. Watercress Line Interim Chief Executive Rebecca Daly said, "The 3-day diesel gala is a fantastic opportunity for anyone interested in diesel traction to get up close and ride behind some of these impressive locomotives. We have an all-day service operating each day of the gala from early morning to evening, providing the opportunity to enjoy the diesel traction over our steeply graded line. There will be plenty to see and do during the event. Something for everybody to enjoy, so please book ahead on the Watercress Line website. For more information and to book tickets, visit the Watercress Line website." And there is a picture of the D6515, looking very smart and shiny. It's a great shame that our other reader, Andrew, isn't here, because he is a bit of a railway geek.
Over to you then, David.
Yes, this is entitled "The Wraps Come Off Bushfield Plan." A master plan has been published to show plans to redevelop a former army base on the edge of Winchester. This is the first time the images have been published in a city council document showing a map and computer images of various parts of Bushfield Camp. The proposal was originally put forward by the church commissioners and their partners. They envisage a business park on the previously built-up land, as well as potential hotel, student accommodation, shops, cafes and sports facilities, and the conservation of the adjacent chalk downland. Several rounds of public consultation were held over the past few months. Winchester City's Council Cabinet will discuss and decide whether to support the master plan at its meeting on Wednesday, June the 21st. Should the plans be approved, the developers aim to have an outline planning application submitted in September, decided in the winter, with work starting on the site in 2025. Bushfield Camp was used by the army during the Second World War. The camp was closed in the 1970s. In the new master plan, it said, "Bushfield will future-proof employment opportunities for years to come, provide space to stem the drain of highly skilled and educated workforces to other cities and communities. As the world evolves to a greener future, Bushfield will provide employment space for Winchester citizens to learn, train, innovate and work locally, accessing their work and leisure space in an integral lifestyle. It will include community facilities, a nursery, places to view the surrounding landscape, public spaces and a managed natural landscape. State-of-the-art workspaces will support Winchester's growing knowledge economy, fostering innovation and optimise user well-being. The development proposals will provide a new and lasting legacy for the city in the form of a 60-acre-plus publicly accessible green space adjacent to local job creation, education opportunities, construction, employment and new revenue flows for the council itself. We estimate up to 2,500 new jobs will be created through the development, both directly and indirectly. Support for the master plan will be decided at the cabinet meeting on Wednesday, June 21st. There's a picture of the computer generated. It looks very, very modern with what looks like green roofs, planted roofs. However, there is another article which is entitled Hundreds in No to the Camp. A petition opposing major plans to redevelop a former army base on the edge of Winchester has received more than 900 signatures. The petition, started by the Badger Farm and Oliver's Battery Residents Community Association, is asking the council to reject the proposal. In the petition's introduction, it said, "We, the undersigned, are opposed to the current Knowledge Park concept master plan for Winchester's Bushfield Camp. We have serious concerns with regard to the pressure this proposal will place on our roads, including traffic volume, local parking and congestion, and as a consequence, emergency service response, increased pressure to our infrastructure, damage to and increased demand of this unique environment, substantially reduced sense of space and the visual impact of this proposal from bordering areas and high points such as St. Catherine's Hill, the safety and well-being of the local community as a consequence of the added pressures and loss of an already valued space, a lack of sufficient accessible dialogue with the developer."
Mental health, schools, play. A play exploring issues around mental health and suicide will tour schools in Hampshire. Titled Let's Talk About Philip, the production is written and performed by Helen Wood and Gregor Hunt. It shares the personal experience of losing a brother to suicide, as well as the many surrounding issues. It is currently touring the UK and has already been performed at Brighton Fringe. Hampshire Child and Adolescent Mental Health Services, CAMHS, is running several events across the county throughout the summer and autumn, where the play will be performed and followed up with workshops led by Hampshire CAMHS clinicians. The event is the latest to focus on suicide prevention, following the installation of a giant rotating sand timer outside of several locations in Hampshire over the last year to reflect the number of times a young person loses their life to suicide. Helen Dove, Innovations and Participation Lead at Hampshire CAMHS, said, "Suicide is a subject which is really important to talk about. The success of the Sand Timer Tour has led to a lot more conversations being started this year." The play will be performed at Brighton Hill Community College, Basingstoke, on October the 10th, Theatre Royal Winchester on October the 11th, and at Ashcroft Arts Centre in Fareham on October the 19th, with a mix of school and public viewings.
Art Studio starts up summer pottery workshops. An art studio in Winchester will offer pottery classes in July. Design Junction, Winchester, in King's Walk, will start offering classes from the 8th of July in the upstairs part of its shop. Customers will be able to enjoy 3 hours with a pottery wheel and some clay, with owners Jacob Davies and Amy Murphy giving them as much or as little guidance as they want. Amy said, "We try to structure pottery in a sense of there would be more tutors. What we found looking at pottery studios around is that it's so structured to the point where you can't come along and be mindful and just have a laugh with it. It is very serious." Jacob added, The days we are doing it are Friday, Saturday and Sunday at the start, and they're going to be self-guided. We will obviously go through health and safety, but it will mainly be about how customers want to work. Instead of painting something which is already made, they can make it and we'll bisque it, and they can come back and decide to glaze it how they want. It's nice for people to come and do something not super serious. Design Junction will start offering its pottery classes from July the 8th, and sessions will cost £45. And there is a picture of Design Junction with Amy and Jacob standing outside. So if you want to get your fingers messy, go along.
This is about a choir from Norway which came to sing at St Andrew's Church in Nether Wallop. A community choir from Norway travelled to a Hampshire village to fulfil their dreams of singing in a medieval church. Vice versa, a choir of 25 people of all ages from the town of Hommersak near Stavanger performed to a full congregation of parishioners and others from the surrounding area of Winchester at St Andrew's Church in Nether Wallop. The church held the event on Sunday, June the 11th, as part of its usual Sunday service. The choir discovered it shares a close spiritual connection with Winchester, as they live near the city of Stavanger, home to a cathedral that shares relics of St Swithin, much like Winchester's cathedral. Vice versa's choir master, Ruth Tipple, even grew up in Winchester. Organiser Emma Todd said, "It was marvellous to welcome and hear the choir at our beautiful church." The special service also celebrated the restoration of the Nether Wallop Church.
And this one headed Hardy Rotarians Brave Hot Coals for Charity. Winchester Rotary members and friends raised more than £3,000 by walking over piping hot coals. For the final fundraiser of Deborah McCartney's presidential year, the president and other brave raisers under Team Rotary completed a fire walk at Homelessness... I'm not having a good run here. At Homelessness Charity Trinity Winchester. UK Firewalk, a company specialises in helping charity raise funds from firewalks, set up the 15-foot track of hot coals. The event, sponsored by Shenton's solicitors, raised more than £3,000 for the President's chosen charities, Trinity Winchester's Women's Services and Hope Street, in brackets One Small Thing, which both work with women to overcome the effects of domestic abuse. Deborah said, "My thanks to my colleagues who took up the challenge and to our sponsors. A great result. I'm grateful to Scott Bell and the team at UK Firewalk for keeping us all safe, and to Shenton's for their support." And there's a photograph, excuse my voice, of about at least 20 of them, all barefoot, having done their hot coals walk and holding their certificates for having done that. People amaze me what they'll do for charity.
Flag raised to mark start of Armed Forces Week. Hampshire's Armed Forces have been honoured in Winchester, marking the start of Armed Forces Week. A platoon of Royal Navy personnel paraded along Castle Avenue to the Great Hall on Monday, June the 19th. The parade was inspected by the Vice Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Colonel Charles Ackroyd, followed by the raising of the Armed Forces flag. Colonel Ackroyd said, "On behalf of His Majesty Lord Lieutenant, it is a privilege to pay tribute to the commitment and dedication of our military personnel, veterans and their families. Hampshire is home to a large armed forces community of more than 20,000 military personnel, of whom we are very proud. We offer our sincere gratitude for their service and sacrifice, and we have raised the armed forces flag today as a symbol of our respect for them and all that they do for our country." The flag was blessed by the Reverend Canon Dr. Roland Ream before being raised by one of the Lord Lieutenant's cadets. The Hampshire County Council fanfare was played by the principal cornet player of the Hampshire Youth Band. Also accompanying Colonel Ackroyd was the County Council Chairman, Councillor Patricia Stallard, Leader Councillor Bob Humby, and the authorities' Armed Forces champion, Councillor Andrew Joy. They were joined by Commodore John Voice, HM Naval Base Commander at Portsmouth, Commander Julian Gazzard from HM Naval Base and Captain Mark Hardwick from the Worthy Down, as well as Lieutenant Colonel Fraser Dowling of the British Army at Worthy Down and Group Captain Donald McGurk of the Royal Air Force at RAF Odium. Senior representatives from the Emergency Services, Winchester City Council, Winchester Crown Court also joined Colonel Aykroyd on the steps, along with the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Angela Clear, and the High Sheriff of Hampshire, Amelia Riviere. Councillor Joy said, "This wonderful event to mark the start of the Armed Forces Week is a chance for people to show their support for the men and women of the forces, past and present. I wish to thank everyone who turned out to watch the parade today in showing their appreciation and respect for our armed forces. Hampshire County Council places enormous value on its long and close relationship with its armed forces community, including regulars, reservists, veterans and their families, and we have always taken our duty to the particular needs of this community very seriously." And there is a number of pictures of the Royal Navy cadets marching into the Great Hall, flag bearers provided by the Royal British Legion, and there's the Vice Lord Lieutenant inspecting a parade, and then there's the Vice Lieutenant taking the salute from the parade on the steps.
Stunning setting for a big charity barn dance. The Home Start charity is preparing for its annual fundraiser in July as sponsor Bill Rawls visited charity patron Sally Stewart. Racing to the charity's aid in his 1961 classic Austin Healey 3000 Mark I, Bill delivered his sponsorship pledge to her farm door. The fundraiser includes a barn dance and hog roast, which will be held on Saturday, July the 1st, at Pingleston's barn, Old Allsford. "Thankfully, we're not having the dance in my barn," said Sally, "but in a stunning 15th century barn in Old Allsford, kindly loaned for the occasion by Lord and Lady Wakeham." She also thanked Bill Rawls Classic Cars for their continued support. Bill said, "We run a family business, so we understand the importance of supporting each other and completely understand the ethos of Home Start, giving young families the best possible start in life." Home Start is a charity which deals with a diverse range of complex issues, including mental health, domestic violence and disabilities. Tickets are available from Home Start Barn Dance, that's all one word, homestartbarndance.eventbrite.co.uk for £30. There's an Irish band whose name I can't pronounce will be supplying the music, and guests can enjoy a hog roast supplied by a locally sourced butcher.
Outstanding celebrations. More than 100 people attended a day of celebrations at a Hampshire nursery after an outstanding Ofsted inspection. Staff, parents and children at Lanterns Nursery School in Berwick Road, Week, celebrated on Wednesday, June 7th. A nursery spokesman said, "We invited all of our Lanterns families to join us for ice creams in the garden after school on Wednesday, June 7th, to celebrate our outstanding Ofsted report." Thankfully, the good weather was on our side and we had over 100 people join the celebration. After the inspection on April the 19th, head teacher Lindsay Falkenham said, "We're thrilled with our latest Ofsted report. The report reflects the hard work, dedication and positive impact that Lanterns Nursery School has on children and families. I would like to take this opportunity to thank everyone in our Lanterns Nursery School community for contributing to our wonderful nursery. To find out more about Lanterns Nursery School, visit lanterns.hants.sch.uk.
Thank you. That concludes our extracts for this week, so thank you to our editors for selecting the extracts, and to the copying and memory stick preparation teams, and thanks, of course, to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Norma York.
Goodbye.
And David Baldwin.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. And when you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.